Well, desire your prayers this evening. Appreciate the Lord's goodness to us, how he's faithful to lead us along the path of life. And if you could say I have this would be an encouragement message to us all from the Lord. It truly has inspired me, and in fact, it somewhat goes along with the message we heard last Wednesday night. Those of you all that weren't here, you missed out on an inspiring message from Brother Rodney Wilson Rodney Smith. And it was definitely, if you could say it was a little cherry on top. We've had a good Monarch meeting, and a good Myrtle meeting, and then to come back and hear from the Lord again. And his thought was, well, in so many words, running the race and pressing on and basically encouraging us to fight on, press on. It's worth every bit to finish the course and finish with victory and to earn our crown, an intangible crown in heaven. But tonight I want to turn and read, there's several verses in fact, but it's a story, history story in our Bible, in the book of Nehemiah. And this was quite a journey that Nehemiah had in his endeavor for the Lord. And you know, sometimes, and when we read some of these scriptures, it doesn't take long to catch on how this relates to us directly today. There's something about how God, when the Bible was written, there were so many things put in there that, I'll just put it this way. The Bible doesn't get old. so many times there's, where we can find stories that relate to us, directly. And stories that, even though this was in the Old Testament, it relates to us today. And what's amazing is how that Nehemiah had such drive, such ambition for something back in these days. And he didn't have, if you could say it this way, all the examples we have before us. Yes, he had some to rely on, like King David, how he persevered through many obstacles in his life and in his journey, and many others he can refer to, some of the other prophets. But yet we're in such a great advantage. We have so many others, the cloud of witnesses that have gone on before us and have finished the course. But here Nehemiah was in a difficult time, difficult era. The children of God had been in captivity. And here Nehemiah, we find in the first chapter, he's basically minding his business and being the cupbearer of King Artaxerxes. And he's minding his business, being the cupbearer and doing his job. And a friend comes by and gives him some news, gives him a little update of what's going on back home, back in Jerusalem. And you find here in Nehemiah, the first chapter, after he asked his friend, he said, "They said unto me," verse 3, "the remnant that are left of the captivity there in the province are in great affliction and reproach. The wall of Jerusalem also is broken down, and the gates thereof are burned with fire." Now we'll just stop right there. And this picture is not a very encouraging picture, is it not? And it's so easy to look around us, and perhaps we don't have to look very far. Perhaps it's in our own family, or it's in our own congregation, or in our own county, state, whatever, in America. We don't have to look very far, and we can find many places where the walls are broken down, and where the folks are afflicted, and are discouraged, and many things opposing them. And so we find here in this case with Nehemiah, after he hears this, look at verse 4. "And it came to pass, when I heard these words, that I sat down and wept, and mourned certain days, and fasted, and prayed before the God of heaven." This touched Nehemiah. This tells me that there was something deep within Nehemiah, that he hated to hear these words, that the walls are still broken down. Now, if you look into this a little deeper, you will understand why this was such an important point with Nehemiah, why he was so saddened with this news. Because the reality is, these walls have been broken down for about 90 years. Now, it's true that they were, through the works of Ezra, the temple had been rebuilt and they were holding worship services, but the walls and the gates were still broken down. It hadn't been repaired, and for 90 years they were in this state. And so you have someone like Nehemiah that wasn't able to be there and wasn't able to add to the effort at the time of encouraging folks to do something about this. And he hears about this and it saddens him. Because, and you read on later here, there's a verse later in verse 17. It says, one of the reasons he wanted these walls rebuilt is because it was a reproach to God. That this was the children of Israel. This was God's people in Jerusalem. This was once a mighty nation. This was once a mighty capital of power when King David and King Solomon were reigning. Talk about power and authority in the land. Everyone was afraid of the Israelites. And now it was nothing but a broken down city. The walls broken down. You could say it this way. The walls symbolizing power and strength and protection for the city. Things that we don't understand, we don't comprehend that. We live in cities where we don't have to worry about that. I mean, we live in a peaceful land, a peaceful nation. But back then, this was a way of proving to everyone else, the enemies out there, if you had these strong, tall walls, thick walls, that we're not intimidated by you, and we have power, we have strength, and we have something to say about what's going on. But if the walls are broken down, it's almost as if it's an invitation or for the enemies to come, or for, it even goes down to we could say in a sense, the little things, different beasts and critters and creatures coming in. There's no protection from the outside world. And, of course, then you have the enemies with the bows and the arrows and the men with swords and spears and all the enemies that could come in and just kind of walk through into your city and just take advantage of you, whatever they please. And so this was Jerusalem, the walls broken down. And Nehemiah is saddened by this, thinking, why has there not been something going on over there? They rebuilt the temple. Why couldn't they do the walls? It's still broken down. So something rose up within him. And now we read on what takes place here. Let's skip on to the second chapter. And let's read the first five verses here. And it came to pass in the month Nisan, the 20th year of Artaxerxes, that the king, that the wine was before him, and I took up the wine and gave it unto the king. Now I had not been before time sad in his presence. Wherefore the king said unto me, why is thy countenance sad, seeing thou art not sick? This is nothing else but sorrow of heart. Then I was very sore afraid. You see, Nehemiah had been serving the king for years here, and had kept up his demeanor and his countenance, and was serving him in the gladness of his heart. But then when he received this news, it touched him so deeply that the king noticed, just like that, that something's different here. And so the king asked him, well, Nehemiah's afraid. He's like, uh-oh. And he said unto the king, let the king live forever. Why should not my countenance be sad? When the city, the place of my father's sepulchres, lieth waste, and the gates thereof are consumed with fire. Then the king said unto me, for what dost thou make request? So I prayed to the God of heaven. Now notice here, this is something we can all take some practical admonition from this, that Nehemiah was going about this in a very cautious way. He wasn't just bursting in there and demanding things of the king and of God and everything, but he was very careful And even when he slipped and let his countenance be sad, he's like, oh, he kind of slipped up there. And he was very careful how he approached the king about it. And even at this, he wants God to have his way in this, and he's afraid to ask, but yet the king wants him to ask. So then he says, well, he explains to him his request. And I said to the king, if it please the king, and if thy servant have found favor in thy sight, that thou wouldest send me into Judah, unto the city of my father's sepulchres, that I may build it. And the king said unto me, the queen also sitting by him, for how long shall thy journey be? And when wilt thou return? So it pleased the king to send me, and I set him a time. And it goes on here. Basically, the king says, okay, I'll grant you your request. But notice here, this is again just a little for what it's worth here. I don't believe for a minute, if Nehemiah hadn't behaved himself in such a manner for not just for this instance, but for years prior to this, had been consistent. And the king was watching his behavior. And when he asked to the king, it was a simple request. To Nehemiah, it was a big task and a big thing to ask. But he lived such a life, such an example that the king, he was touched with his passion about what he wanted to do. And he's like, well, sure, you can go do that. You know, that encourages me that when we are faced with obstacles in our lives and we're faced with decisions and tough situations, not knowing what to do, that Lord, help us to live a consistent life. And Lord, help us to live, and Scripture says, be an example of the believers. Because then when we ask a favor of God, and in turn in favor of those we're having to work with or other situations, that God will find favor in that. And God will work for us. And that's what God did for Nehemiah here. Because you see, it was a bigger cause than just something that Nehemiah wanted to do. Nehemiah was not wanting recognition. He was not wanting fame. He wasn't wanting money, by all means. This was just something, as we know the story of little David, when he wanted to go fight against Goliath. It was, how can he defy our God and to curse, you know, how dare you do that to our God? You know, and he's talking about Goliath and how Goliath was just basically using God's name in vain. And how dare you do that? And is there not a cause? Is that, you know, well, let's go. What's going on here? Well, that's the same attitude Nehemiah was having, is this is not right. Something needs to be done. So God found favor in that. Well, then we see how Nehemiah took some action. The king allowed him to take, he actually sent some guards, sent some of his men on horses with Nehemiah, and gave a letter of permission to go do the work, carry this work out. Well, little did Nehemiah know what was before him. He had no idea what was going to happen. He, no doubt in his mind, he's thinking, you know what? I'm going to go jump in this job, this task, and I'm going to get this done and everything. You know, we're going to get things rebuilt. I'm going to go back home and, you know, whatever, and everything will be okay. Well, it didn't work out that easily. It was soon after this. Nehemiah rides into town, and he's riding around, and he realizes very quickly that he's not going to be able to really explain what all he's doing. He shows up there, and everyone's wondering, what's he doing? What's going on here? And a lot of suspicions, a lot of questions. So he decides the best thing to do is just to go at nighttime and go by himself, maybe a couple of guys with him, and go explore the situation. How bad are the walls broken down? And what kind of things, and no doubt things would continue to deteriorate after 90 years of it being broken down. Things were no doubt in pretty rough shape. So he goes in the cover of darkness and goes exploring and looking at things over. And no doubt he's thinking, wow, this is quite a job. But then the next morning, he's scurrying around, and then others are pressing, wanting to know, you know, what's really going on here. Then it goes to the second chapter, in verse 18, and they're asking him, and he says, then I told them of the hand of my God, which was good upon me, as also the king's words that he had spoken unto me. And they said, let us rise up and build. You see, he explained to them what he was desiring to do and how everything had transpired. And he explored the the walls and everything and the task that was at hand and explained to them what he wanted to do. And so he's telling the people, and they said, "Let us rise up and build." And so they strengthened their hands for this good work. So this was a good thing. Everyone was getting pumped up and encouraged about this and excited that we're finally going to get something rebuilt. And here's a man that's willing to lead the charge, and he seems excited about this job, and he wants to get it done, and he believes he can get it done in a couple of months here, and let's go get it. You know, it's almost like, I'll just relate this to, we could say the camp meeting season. We just had several camp meetings. We've all been in several services, heard several messages, a lot of songs, a lot of testimonies. We're all encouraged and inspired to fight on, to press on, and go spread the good news of the gospel and get souls saved. And it's all good, great, and wonderful. And that's what we need to do. But look at this next verse. What happens when everyone's excited, everyone's pumped up about this? We're going to go set the world on fire, so to speak. We're going to rebuild the walls. But verse 19, "But when Sanballat, the Horonite, and Tobiah, the servant, the Ammonite, and Geshem, the Arabian, heard it, they laughed us to scorn and despised us and said, 'What is this thing that ye do? Will ye rebel against the king?'" So right off the bat here, here is the enemy, okay? Here is someone to contest this very thing. They're desiring a good cause. What's wrong with this? Just rebuilding the walls. Why leave? These are death traps. This is nothing but a hazard for everyone. All these walls, broken down walls laying down. You know, this is a good thing. And yet someone right off the bat here is laughing them to scorn. Just sitting back and saying, "What do you guys think you're doing?" You realize we have a foe just the same that wants to, if he hasn't yet, he wants to laugh in your face saying, "What do you think you really did this summer? Do you really think you got something from the Lord? Do you really think you're going to go set the world on fire? Do you really think you're going to stay encouraged? Do you really, and all these questions and just laughing at you." Okay, that's the devil's business. And that's exactly what Sanballat started doing to Nehemiah right off the bat. Okay, but I want to tell you something. That was just the start. There's many more to review here of what Sanballat tried to do to discourage Nehemiah and those that are working to rebuild these walls. And he said, verse 20, "Then answered I them and said unto them, 'The God of heaven, he will prosper us. Therefore, we his servants will arise and build. But ye have no portion, nor right, nor memorial in Jerusalem.'" Do you know what Nehemiah was basically telling Sanballat and all these other guys, saying, "Buzz off"? He's telling them, "You get out of here." Basically, it's the same. You could put it in modern, in the New Testament terminology. Resist the devil and he'll flee from you. But I'm going to tell you something. He just fled for a little ways. Sanballat did. He didn't flee very far. But yet Nehemiah resisted him and saying, "This is God's work and you have nothing to do with this. All right. This is not your church. This is not your city. This is not your temple. Okay. You're not serving this God. So get out of here." All right, that's what he's telling Sanballat. You know, that's what we have to tell the devil as well. Saying, "This is not your church, Satan. This is God's church. And God is well able to take care of his church and his servants. And I'm just here to do God's work." And he's just a servant. That's what Nehemiah is telling Sanballat. "I'm just a servant for the Almighty God. If God wants to have something, if God wants to prosper something, he'll prosper it." And that's what he's telling Sanballat here. Well, you could say Sanballat buzzed off for a few minutes, but he was back. He came back many times. Let's read. There's so many we could read here. Let's go to the fourth chapter, and we'll see what happens here. You see, this was a great task. And Nehemiah went about it in such an impressive way, and no doubt God led him, directed him in this, where he was able to split up all the families, and they each had a certain portion of the wall that they were supposed to work on. And it worked very well. And they were working side by side, and they were there to encourage one another and helping one another, and a beautiful picture. You could say this was a type of the church. They were all in unison working towards the same goal. They wanted to build this wall. Again, a symbol of God's power and authority in His church and salvation. So they were all encouraged to work together, and they started rebuilding the wall. But here again, here came old Sanballat. Chapter 4, verse 1. But it came to pass that when Sanballat heard that we builded the wall, that they were in process of it, he was wroth and took great indignation and mocked the Jews. Yeah. So here we go again. Here comes Sanballat for round number 2. Ding, ding, ding. Here he comes. Okay, now he wants to go harass him some more. And harass him he did. And it said, he spake before his brethren in the army of Samaria and said, what do these feeble Jews, will they fortify themselves? Will they sacrifice? Will they make an end in a day? Will they revive the stones out of the heaps of the rubbish which are burned? Doesn't that just sound like the devil again? Just whining and moaning and complaining, poking fun, mocking them and laughing at them. Well, here he goes again. Sanballat doing the same thing. And now Tobiah, and Ammonite was by him. The Ammonite was by him. And he said, even that which they build, listen to this. This just sounds childish. Even that which they build, if a fox go up, he shall even break down their stone wall. Now, doesn't that just sound like the devil? He's wanting to say, why, whatever salvation, whatever sanctification, whatever baptizing, whatever you got, it's gonna come up short in about 5 days. You know, that's what he's gonna say. It ain't gonna amount to, you won't last till next monarch, or you won't last till the end of the school year, you won't last till next month. Let me tell you something, that's the devil talking to you. That's the enemy of your souls talking to you. That's not God whispering in your ears. That's the devil spitting in your face, laughing at you, poking fun at you, just doing all these things, just like a little kid. Well, he wasn't through yet. Again, making fun of him, just saying even a fox could knock it over. Something else, isn't he? Well, then it goes on. Verse 7. But it came to pass that when Sanballat and Tobiah of the Arabians and the Ammonites and Ashdod and the Ashdodites heard that the walls of Jerusalem were made up, they were making some progress here, and that the breaches began to be stopped, then they were very wroth. They were just wroth earlier. Now they're very wroth. And conspired all of them to come together to come and to fight against Jerusalem and to hinder it. So at first, they're just throwing little words, throwing little stones, you know, sticks and stones and all those things, but throwing a few words in there too, making fun of them and laughing at them and mocking them and just making jokes about them. But now they realize that's not stopping them either. So now they're saying, okay, we're going to come up, we're going to fight against you. Yes. But they were going to do it in a sneaky way. They were going to hide in the rubble, you know, kind of these little sneak attacks. We'll just wait till they're not looking, and we're going to sneak up behind them. They're trying to build this wall over here and lift this stone and lift that stone, and someone's going to be hiding under this stone over here. When they go to lift this stone up, we're going to sneak up. We're going to hit them on the head. We're going to cut their throat or whatever. And isn't that just like the devil wanting to take cheap shots? That's all the that's all Sanballat's wanting to do. But yet, God had a way of tipping off Nehemiah and let him know what they were planning to do. So if you read the rest of the fourth chapter here, we're not going to read all of it. I want to read a few verses. It's interesting what Nehemiah does. He takes some action saying, okay, now we're getting down to all right, we're going to have to fight back. Okay? We've heard the words. They're making fun of us. And it came to pass, verse 12, that when the Jews which dwelt by them came, they said unto us 10 times from all places whence ye shall which you shall return unto us, they will be upon you. Therefore set I in the lower places behind the wall, and on the higher places I even set the people after their families with their swords and their spears and their bows. And I looked and rose up, and I said unto the nobles and to the rulers and to the rest of the people, Be not afraid of them. Remember the Lord, which is great and terrible, and fight for your brethren, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your houses. Let's stop right here and consider this. Do you realize what Nehemiah is doing here? He's asking them, is there not a cause that this is God's city? This is God's temple? This is God's people? Are we going to let them continue to take these cheap shots and continue to make fun of us and mock us? Let's keep on building. Let's keep on marching forward and continue this task that God has given us. And he says, and it came to pass when our enemies heard that it was known unto us, and God had brought their counsel to naught, that we returned all of us to the wall, every one unto his work. And it came to pass from that time forth that the half of my servants wrought in the work, and the other half of them held both the spears and the shields and the bows and the habergeons, and the rulers were set behind all the house of Judah, and they which builded on the wall, and they which bare burdens with those that that laid it, even every one of us, his hands wrought in the work, and with the other hand held a weapon. So you realize what they're doing here. They have two tasks at hand. I'm going to work for the Lord and fight against the enemy. You see what I'm saying? And this is something, y'all take courage here. This was not just Nehemiah doing this. Take notice of this. This was all of them, okay? They were all doing this together. They were all fighting together in unison, in unity against the enemy of their city. Against Sanballat and all these guys just mocking him and poking fun at him. But yet they were joined together. And when one was working over here, the other one standing here with the sword and with the shield and with the spear ready to fight, covering his back. You realize that's what we're doing for each other? Yes. We're fighting for each other, not just for God. We're fighting for each other. We're standing watching each other's back, so to speak. You've heard the term, especially in real warfare, where they would say, hey, watch my back. What does that mean? That means the other guy, he's standing behind you. And if the enemy's going to try to sneak up, he'll help take care of him. You realize that's what we can do for each other? Yes, we have the Lord ultimately. Don't get me wrong here. But yet there is a part that we all can do for each other. Just as a song number 509, We Need Each Other, Brethren. Read the words to that song. I will stand by your side and defend you. That's what these brethren were doing here. They were defending each other, okay? Well, then it goes on, verse 19. And I said unto the nobles and to the rulers and to the rest of the people, get this, the work is great and large, and we are separated upon the wall, one far from another. You know what that's saying here today? The work is great and large. In other words, this is not an easy road, so to speak. We sang the song earlier, his yoke is easy and his burden light. And that's true. But I want to remind us of what Apostle Paul said. And we heard about some of this last Wednesday night, Brother Rodney Smith. That he had to press toward the mark. He had to run. He had to put a lot of effort and training and perseverance in it to win that prize, okay? You know, that's the same with you and I. That the work is great and large. There is a task at hand. We must labor to enter into that rest, the scripture says. There has to be some work involved, some denying self, all right? You realize that's what these people were having to do? They were used to these 90 years. They just sat back. Well, we rebuilt the temple, and now we'll just kind of sit back. But here they had a cause, and they all joined together, Nehemiah leading the pack, so to speak, that we want to build the walls. And they all joined forces and joined together, and they were making some progress. But with that progress, bear in mind, the enemy was upset. And it goes on. The enemy wasn't through. He was willing to keep fighting back. Here in the sixth chapter, we'll see what Sanballat's up to this time. Nehemiah 6, We'll start with verse 1. Now it came to pass, when Sanballat and Tobiah and Geshem the Arabian and the rest of our enemies heard that I had builded the wall. See, this is more progress. And that there was no breach left therein. Still more progress. Though at the time I had not set up the doors upon the gates. It wasn't finished yet, but a lot more progress. That Sanballat and Geshem sent unto me, saying, come, let us meet together in some of the villages in the plain of Ono. But they thought to do me mischief. You realize what was going on here? They realized all these other efforts were failing. They weren't discouraging. The work was continuing to make progress. And they could see, like, we tried all these things, and yet they just keep going on and keep building, and they're not discouraged. And what do we do now? Well, let's take out their leader. Let's take out old Mr. Nehemiah. Let's try to assassinate him, maybe. Perhaps. Whatever it was. It was mischief they had in mind. You know, they tried the same thing with Jesus. And they succeeded to a point. They thought they had fixed their problem once and for all when Jesus was hanging there on the cross and when he was put in that tomb. I want to tell you something. The work wasn't finished. Jesus still had some things up his sleeve, so to speak. You know, that was the same with Nehemiah. He wasn't through. And God wasn't through with it. The enemy thought, we got him this time. So they tried to, let's go have a little meat. Let's go out for dinner tonight, so to speak. And Nehemiah said, nope, not going to do it. Well, do you think Sanballat took just that one answer, no, and left him? No. You think he buzzed off for good? No. He came back again. And he came back again. And he came back again. And he came back again 4 times. Just come meet with me. It's okay. Let's just come. It's all right. But Nehemiah, he sniffed it out with the Lord's help, saying, nope, I'm not going to go. I'm not foolish. the 5th time, Sanballat, he got a little craftier. Just like the devil, he's always coming up with new ways to run us down, to run us off, to discourage us. And Sanballat says, okay. And he brings this open letter to Nehemiah saying, you know what? And basically, he's spreading slander and accusations. He starts spreading these rumors that Nehemiah is trying to become king himself and to build up these walls to make his own little kingdom and rebel against the real king, okay? Artaxerxes. Our enemy of our souls does the same thing. He loved to slander the children of God, the church of God. He loves doing that, trying to twist things to, well, it looks like they're doing this, so I'm going to say they're actually doing this. And trying to blackmail us, so to speak, and put us in a position where we think we have to stand up and defend ourselves. But you know what Nehemiah did? He basically used the same, tact, and he just laughed him off, say, you don't know what you're talking. All these accusations are false. He didn't entertain this, and he didn't meet with him again to read this letter and go over all this, and because he wanted him to sit down and let's have a little council meeting together. Let's talk about this thing, and let's try to hash this out. In other words, if you give a little bit, I'll give a little bit. If you let up a little bit, and if you don't finish those walls, I'll quit picking on you. That's what Sanballat's trying to convince him. Or if you don't stop, I'm going to really cause an uproar here. And I'm going to send this letter out, and everyone's going to know. And the king, he's going to hear about this, and he's going to put a stop to this. Isn't that just like the devil? Just to play with our minds and try to get us so confused and get our souls rattled, so to speak, and get all afraid and scared. Say, what's going to happen next? And when all along our duty is, and what Nehemiah proved to be true here, just keep pressing on. Keep building that wall. Plug your ears. Kind of like Christian did. Plugged his ears and just took off for that celestial city. Didn't want to hear what everyone's trying to say to discourage him. You realize we have to do the same thing. Sometimes we just have to plug our ears. Say, devil, I don't want to hear it. Well, the work was almost finished. And it was as if the enemy had kicked out all the props. In other words, he turned, opened the gates, just trying everything he could in his imagination to stop God's work. You know, that's the same that's happening today. Don't be surprised. As the old saying goes, if the devil's fighting you, you have something that he wants. You have something that he wants to destroy. That's why he's fighting you. That's why Sanballat was fighting and fussing and mocking and laughing and doing all these things, writing letters, throwing slander and accusations, false accusations, all these things about Nehemiah, because Nehemiah was doing something to prosper God's work. And the devil doesn't like us one bit. When we go to worship services, we go to camp meetings, and we get food to our soul, and we raise our hands, and we testify, and we sing loud, and we get excited, and we're spreading all this joy and happiness with everyone else. We come to Wednesday night services, and we're pumped up, and we're testifying. The devil doesn't like that. And don't be surprised that on your way home from a testimony service, the devil's going to be sitting right there on your shoulder, laughing at you, mocking you, poking fun at you, saying, ah, a fox could push that over. Ah, a little three-year-old could testify better than what you did. That's the devil, okay? But somehow, some way, we're human, okay? And sometimes it's so easy that we just kind of entertain the devil just for a little bit. And sometimes it's easy to let him sit there too long that we just need to say, bug off. I resist you in the name of Jesus. This is not your church. This is not your testimony. This is not your salvation. This is not your Jesus. This is not your experience. This is my experience, okay? And this is God's people's experiences. This is what they're enjoying, okay? And here you are trying to squash it. You know, that's just like the devil. Well, how does the story end? In the 6th chapter, verses 15 and 16. So the wall was finished in the 25th day of the month, Elul, in 52 days. Now that's impressive in itself. Without modern technology and conveniences, these folks were able to rebuild the walls of this massive city in 52 days. You know what I say? I say the Lord was working for him. Amidst all the confusion, amidst all the attacks of the enemy, this was a miracle. This is amazing. And look what they said. And it came to pass that when all our enemies heard thereof, and all the heathen that were about us saw these things. Oh, I love this. They were much cast down in their own eyes, for they perceived that this work was wrought of our God. To God be the glory. God was able to finish this task, and the enemy could do nothing but just go home and pout and just beat up on each other. Why didn't we do this? Why didn't we try that? Look, they succeeded. They finished it. They finished their course. They won their prize, and this is just terrible. And they go home and have a little pity party. That's all Sanballat could do. There was not a thing. The wall was finished. The work was done. God completed the work. This was all of God. And here's something that's bear in mind here. Read this last bit. And they perceived that this work was wrought of our God. There was nothing. Nehemiah wasn't taking a bit of this glory. None of the other leaders that were, and none of the other mighty warriors that were defending those that were working and back and forth, all this, none of them were taking the glory. They, even the heathen could sense and realize that this was God's work. This was God that kept them, that helped them, enabled them to persevere through all of this. And they're thinking, where do we go wrong? I'm going to tell you where they went wrong. They picked on the wrong people. They picked on the wrong God. This is the God that's alive. This is the God that has all supreme authority, created all things. And this was nothing for our God. You know, but yet they went home and they were cast down. I want to tell you something. If you want to see the enemy get upset, and you want to see him have a little pity party, you want to see him run off and pout, you persevere and you finish the work. You finish the course. You run the race, okay? And let's put it this way. We could say the moral of this story is, one of the morals of the story, just consider Nehemiah, just for a moment here, one man dedicated to a cause of God, not of himself, okay? A cause of God, one man, look what was accomplished. Isn't that impressive? If just one person, okay, this should be encouraging to all of us, that if we stay faithful and we rise up to the occasion, is there not a cause? We don't want to bring a reproach upon God and upon His church. Is there not a cause that we can go out there and do something? For 90 years, these people have sat back and just been lazy bones. They're not doing anything. I'm thinking, is there not something I can do? And Nehemiah, he rose to the occasion. And he persevered through all of this. And in the meantime, encouraged the rest of them. Then they got a hold of that. And it encouraged them. And they fought on. And they pressed on. And the work was complete. So that's one of the morals of the story. Another one is this. Now listen closely here. Good things aren't easy. And easy things aren't good. Now think about that for a moment. Good things aren't easy. You realize this was a good and noble cause. Was it not? But let me tell you something. It wasn't smooth sailing. Because the enemy realized that he had something to lose. And the enemy wanted to defeat this. He didn't want to see this thing. He wanted to hinder it. As many times as mentioned, he wanted to hinder the progress all the way from start to finish. That's just like our enemy of our souls. Good things aren't easy. Well, you can look at it this way. How about relationships that God has ordained? Marriages? Parents? When they're children? The church? All these things relate. Good relationships. That's what God promotes and encourages. Yet, those are some of the greatest challenges in life. Because good things aren't easy. let's use another little analogy here. What about food? Let's just be all frank and honest here tonight. Healthy food is, number one, harder to get. Number two, usually more expensive. And number three, usually doesn't taste as good. As all the other junk food, all you got to do is drive down here to what used to be Dave's Superstop, go in what they call a convenience store, and walk down the aisles. Do you see any wheat bread? Do you see any asparagus? Do you see any? No. It's just junk food. Good things aren't easy, and easy things aren't good. Well, it's easy to go to the convenience store and buy all these things that are not healthy for our bodies, but they taste good, they're cheaper, and it's easier access. I don't have to drive all the way to Walmart or all the way to some other grocery store. I can just go down to the corner here, right here to this little convenience store, and get what I need because it's so much easier. Do you realize that's how the devil approaches us in our spiritual walk? He just say, just take a few shortcuts, it's okay. Just kind of go with the flow and just, you know, be cool about it. It's all right. Everyone else is doing this and this and comparing ourselves among ourselves. When Nehemiah is saying, no, I see what happens when we compare ourselves among ourselves. For 90 years, the walls are laying in rubble. And Nehemiah is saying, no, I refuse to accept that. Is there not a cause? Isn't there something better, healthier we can do for our God, for the church? Lord, help us not to accept the easy things. Well, the last moral of the story, this one's an easy one, but it's perhaps the hardest, as we read tonight. The old simple saying, never, never, never give up. You pray for me that I be faithful. Yes.